Welcome back to another episode of The Textual Talk. I'm HD.
And I'm Cyber Shorty. And y'all, today is episode 209. And of course, we're not slowing down.
If you're new here, welcome to the show where we break down what's happening in tech and cybersecurity in a way that actually makes sense. No gatekeeping, no jargon walls, just real talk about what matters.
And if you've been rocking with us, you already know every episode you leave knowing something that you didn't know before. And today, today's going to be a good one.
We got five stories and every single one of them is different this week.
South Korea just dropped a $400 million fine on a company that has got taken down by a former employee who kept a key he said he was never supposed to have. Insider threat at that scale made international news and it got diplomatic.
CrowdStrike just told us that nearly half of all state-sponsored hacks targeting U.S. tech companies over the last year came from one group. And those hackers, they're not breaking in, they're getting hired.
Anthropic released a public version of their most powerful AI, and the very people it was built for, security researchers, are the most frustrated about it. We're getting into the why.
ServiceNow, the platform running IT at thousands of companies, just confirmed attackers got to a vulnerability before the patch did. We'll break down what that means for anyone working in the enterprise.
And Google filed a lawsuit today against a Chinese cybercrime network that used Google's own AI to scan hundreds of thousands of people. They turned Gemini into a phishing factory. We'll get into all of it.
Plus, we're switching it up with a new segment this episode.
The Cyber Spelling Bee. We're spelling cyber terms live on air, and it gets harder as we go. Your co-host, of course, Will Fold. I'm just saying.
We'll see about that. Let's get into it. Welcome back, everybody, to the Textual Talk. I'm your host, HD.
And you got your girl, Cyber Shorty, in the house.
If you're watching this on YouTube, then you already know what to do. Hit that like button, subscribe for us. Let me get these things on the screen for us real quick, you know, so y'all can see what we actually been doing. The first one that we want to get into is the Coupang. They were fined $409 million for the data breach, even though I got 400 EMs up there. You kind of get it. South Korea drops a $409 million hammer on Coupang. Fun fact, I actually interviewed for them in 2021. They was hiring like crazy. So, you ever leave a job and take the keys? This story is the corporate version of that, and it costs one company over $400 million. South Korea's data protection regulator, the PIPC, just hit Coupang with a record-breaking $624.7 billion fine. That's $409 million, the largest data breach penalty in South Korean history. Coupang is the Amazon of Asia, an American-listed South Korean-based e-commerce giant with 95,000 employees and over $30 billion in annual revenue. And two-thirds of South Korea's entire population had their data compromised. That's crazy.
Two-thirds is insane.
The suspect, a 43-year-old Chinese national who worked in Coupang's IT department, he personally built the company's alternative authentication system while employed. Before he left at the end of 2024, he stole the signing key that underpinned it. The breach ran from January 2025 through mid-2025, affecting 33.2 million registered members and an additional 4.3 million non-members who didn't even know Coupang had their data. The kicker is the regulator formally urged Coupang four times to notify those non-member victims. They failed to do so each time. The fine reflects not just the breach, but the cover-up behavior. The political angle is wild, too. Korean lawmakers accuse U.S. representatives of applying diplomatic pressure to go easy on Coupang because it's an American-listed company. This breach turned into a geopolitical incident, and it's not over. South Korea just passed amendments raising the fine ceiling from 3% to 10% of the total revenue for gross negligence cases. That takes effect September 2026. The next company to mess up pays more. So let's break down some of these key terms so you can understand what we're talking about. The PIPC, South Korea's Personal Information Protection Commission, is their version of data privacy enforcer. The signing key is a cryptographic credential that authenticates users. Stealing it equals master access. Coordinated disclosure, the proper process for notifying victims of a breach in a timely way. Now, here's the career angle of that. Identity and access management, managing who has what access and revoking it on departure, and of course, insider threat program, detecting employees who may misuse privileged access, whether intentionally or unintentionally, and privacy compliance data protection officer, a role exploding globally as fines scale up. So, here's some things you can study. What is the principle of least privilege? How does it present insider threats? How do certificate key rotations work, and why didn't Coupang revoke theirs? Explore GDPR versus South Korea's PIPA. Compare how they differ and enforce data privacy. What do you think about them not doing what they told them to notify those people over four times?
I think it don't even matter because they got that fine, and that fine is enough for them to have learned their lesson.
The crazy thing about stuff like this is that since they're such a major player, people have no choice but to use them. They don't have a direct competitor.
Yep. And I think it's insane that it was two-thirds of the population. I mean, it's insane, but it's also not insane. I don't know. 43-year-old man. Yeah. Who stole the key?
But this
33.2 million.
This goes back to kind of what I talk about too. Is like when you have people working overseas, offshore, and stuff like that, where they don't necessarily care too much about what happens in your country. All those different things, and why some companies are doing more nearshoring now versus offshoring, trying to prevent stuff like this.
Four times.
But also, it's just crazy because why weren't they using like the standardized way to authenticate?
Four times. I think that it's embarrassing when that comes out. Yeah, it's embarrassing that this happened, 1,000%. But it's embarrassing to know that you have four opportunities to fix things and you didn't. That's the more embarrassing piece.
Yeah, I agree.
And also raising that, passing those amendments, raising the fine from the 3% to 10%. They're not playing. That's a lot of money. But, you know, that's sometimes how people learn. It's be those fines because if you can cover it up, you're going to cover it up, obviously. Yeah,
but that's, the $409 million is kind of like a drop in the bucket for them anyway. They're doing, what, $30 billion mm-hmm. annually? So that's nothing. But the thing is, I don't care about no fine. Pay the people who money and data's out there. Pay them.
They're not.
That's
we don't know because we don't know.
They're not. When has a company ever paid us?
I mean, they just give us,
hey, you got 3 months of TransUnion and Equifax. And I'm like,
but South Korea is a little, ain't they the ones that's real not playing?
No, that's North Korea.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, South Korea, the ones that make all the cars. We like the Kias and the Hyundais and everything else and the Genesis.
Kia.
That's them. Did you want to start on, I guess we could do the service now when it looks like it's next in the queue. Let me put you up here real quick and.
All right. ServiceNow vulnerability, the enterprise platform your company runs on, had an incident. So the one important thing that we kind of want to point out here is that the fact that ServiceNow obviously is everywhere. So ServiceNow is a platform that powers IT service management. It also powers HR workflows, finance automation, and security operations at thousands of companies worldwide. So if something breaks at work, for example, what you do is you typically will file a ticket, and there's a solid chance that that ticket will be going into what is known as ServiceNow. Now, let's break down what happened. So a new vulnerability was just confirmed, exploited in the wild. Attackers used an unauthenticated API flaw to query data from customer instances before a patch was deployed on June 5th. So what that means is that unauthenticated, to break it down, means that no login was required. So the attacker didn't just need a username, a password, or credentials. They just hit the API endpoint, and they were able to pull that data. And that vulnerability resided in a critical API endpoint that lacked, obviously, the proper authentication controls. And so once they were inside, the attackers could query data from customer instant tables. Now, this is actually the third ServiceNow vulnerability in the last year that allowed user impersonation. There was also a remote code execution sandbox escape, and that was the one that was actually exploited before a patch could drop. Now, what we kind of notice here is that those integrated platforms obviously are expanding the attack surface, just like we kind of see when you have, obviously a vendor, right? So ServiceNow has AI features. It also has Assist, which is a virtual agent API, and that also has automation modules. So every new feature obviously brings in a new potential entry point. And so as we start to see that enterprise software get smarter, obviously it's also going to get more exposed. So obviously if you're running ServiceNow, check that your instance is patched. Make sure you take a look at some of your access logs to see if you notice any anomalous activity. And you can find out, of course, which version you're running. There are a couple of key terms that I want to kind of cover here. So an API endpoint is a specific URL interface that allows software to be able to talk to a platform. It is a frequent attack target because of that, because it's an endpoint. Now, if you think about this from a career angle, you have application security engineers who are securing those potential platforms like ServiceNow, as well as APIs against these exact type of vulnerability classes. And then you also have a vulnerability management analyst. So that's the person who would be tracking those CVEs, coordinating any patching within the organization, and helping to really focus in on reducing any exposures. And then CVE, if you're not familiar, is common vulnerabilities and exposure. It's just a numbered ID for basically like a known security flaw. So think about it as like a phone book number for them. So I think that you should pay attention to this one. You have the OWASP API security top 10, and you can see their API flaws are one of the fastest growing attack categories. You can also use maybe try HackMe or HackTheBox and focus in on those labs that are for API authentication vulnerabilities, and maybe look into just what that particular CVE is, how it was exploited, and so on, just so you have some information and you're kind of following the story and making your own connections there. But HD, what do you think about the ServiceNow incident?
It was cool. I mean, not cool, but for the people affected, they probably suck for them. But everybody who uses ServiceNow was looking at that. I mean, we was talking with Threat Intel about it and, you know, posting different things. So it was funny.
Funny is crazy.
Not funny as ha-ha, but...
Ain't that a TikTok sound?
It was, from the backyard again. It's like, not funny, ha-ha, funny,
yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
But no, in all seriousness, when this came out, we were trying to scramble around. Hey, what version is running?
How long did it take you to find out?
I'm going to tell you, it didn't take me long at all. Because on our shift, typically mid-shift, everybody getting off. So I used one of the, I'm not going to say too much because people be figuring out what you use at work. But one of the more popular documentation tools that people use in their environments, where you reacted to a TikTok of a person that used to work there. But they have an AI tool embedded in the software.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just asked it, hey, can you give me any information on what version of Snow we're running? And it told me. So right there, I knew, at least in production, we weren't affected by this because we weren't running the version that it was running. The version, I don't know if your thing stated it, but the version.
Let me see. I think it did. Maybe not.
The version that was affected was Australia. Matter of fact, I might try to put these pictures right here, what ServiceNow they reported. They said, because my other phone might be dead. Yeah, on that day, they sent these things out of just saying June 5th, they applied a security update concerning a security issue that could allow an unauthenticated user to do that. And people asking, is my instance in the scope of a security issue? The security issue pertains to customers who are on the Australia platform release or made certain configuration changes to instances on releases prior to Australia. So the biggest thing with stuff like that was figuring out not only our prod instances, but if our dev instances were susceptible to that and anything else based on the workarounds or safeguards, which we weren't. So it didn't turn out to be, you know, pretty much a nothing burger for us. But if...
Did you feel like a little, oh my God, no, good.
No, because if I...
You did the right thing.
I don't feel like that because it would have already been big enough by the time I got to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already on Twitter. Funny enough, that news actually was posted on Twitter first. So... A lot of times people say, hey, how you keep up with security news? Even though you might think it sounds silly, a lot of people toast this stuff on X.
No, they really do, especially like some big dogs, some people that are heavily followed in security researchers and so on.
Yeah.
I was shocked. And it's been like that at least, I mean, it's been like that before because I started in the SOC in 21. So, yeah, and I remember my... CISO was telling me about the folks that he followed on X, which was Twitter at the time.
Yeah, so between that and Reddit mm-hmm. also has like good stuff that people post about. So
I like, and I think that people like Reddit because it's more anonymous
mm-hmm.
than you being. I mean, you can be anonymous on X too, but you know.
Yeah, I think anonymous, but some people are smart and they leverage it. Marcus Hutchins, like on LinkedIn, is always like he has the funniest post I ever see. And it's like, you know, a normal person can't say it, but a person who stopped Ronald Crock can pretty much say whatever they want to. So, speaking of, while we are on that, we were talking about Reddit. Let's actually get into. I found some like interesting ones that I think people will like. Let me go to my thing. It's like two I think I want to really talk about. It's in it. I don't want to talk about them because we don't normally talk about this. Where is it? Well, actually, I got a lot to talk about. But we won't stick on them all. This is our version of Serving Scandalous. All right. So the first one is, what if I am happy with my IT help disposition? And he says, I'm currently in the IT help disposition, but I also do some video production and social media graphic creation. I've been at my current government position for 5 years now. Before that, 5 years doing IT support at a manufacturing company. Lately, I have been considering certificates or another degree. I have a BS in computer science, but I really like my job and the users that I work with. Almost all the users I help are understanding and friendly. I genuinely enjoy helping them and teaching daily. I like interacting with users in person, and I get a lot of satisfaction and fulfillment out of my job. There is so much online about leaving help desk as soon as you can, but honestly, aside from making more money, my passion is here. Thoughts? Yeah, I mean, I just want to talk about that. Like, the comments are all going to say the same thing. Like, hey, if you're happy, we love it.
I was
like,
just going to say. But yeah. You don't have to believe the hype. You don't have to follow what other people are doing. If it's paying the bills and fulfilling your spirit, by all means, my boy, stay there.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, we don't normally see people that say that. It's always, I hate it, I hate it. So that's why I thought it would be pretty cool to talk about.
A different perspective, for sure.
Yeah. Now, this is a short one. It was a picture, and I'm going to try to put it right here if I remember. It said, after 3 technical rounds, this is what they had to say to me. Hi, they blocked their name out. Only 2 candidates have been shortlisted so far, and unfortunately, you were not selected. The hiring team likely passed on your profile due to lack of a LinkedIn presence. In today's market, we consider a complete LinkedIn profile a decisive factor to help verify candidates and filter out fabricated resumes. And why did I hone in on that? Because we have everything with North Korea, and they are using the laptop forms and posing as people using AI to interview. And companies are trying to see who they are. Like, I've had times where literally, like, either the same day or the next day, a recruiter's asking me, hey, can you get on a call, a video call real quick? We're just trying to verify who you are on your LinkedIn. Mm-mm. And so that's the thing. So for all the people like, hey, I got my LinkedIn hidden and stuff like that, I get it. While you don't need a LinkedIn to get a job, it can help you out, especially when everybody's using AI and you may not even get seen. So somebody just being able to find you on LinkedIn is a major key. Not alone, they find you on there when they email you about those positions. So I'll just say, if you not considering having LinkedIn, you're in a job search, you need it, because at this point it's better than your resume, like I said last week.
I got a good Reddit one that's kind of like that.
Okay, go ahead.
AI voice cloning plus email equals a new business email compromise attack we should all be worried about. A colleague just shared a story that's been stuck in my head. A company got a voicemail from their CEO asking for an urgent wire transfer. The voice sounded exactly like him, same tone, same speech pattern, same little pauses. They almost processed it. Turns out someone used AI voice cloning on publicly available clips of the CEO speaking at conferences. Combine that with a spoofed follow-up email and you've got a nearly undetectable attack. If your company processes wire transfers, please add voice verification to your training. Most security awareness programs focus on email security, but completely miss phone-based attacks. We've talked about something like that before.
What's funny is that's actually something that Nicole and I brought up. When I was saying, like, these C-level execs getting spearfished and stuff like that, do they have certain code words so the people in their company know that's not them if they're being deepfaked and using their voice? And a lot of people don't.
That's so scary. Like,
that's also why some people should go to the person you reach.
We already talked about this. It should be also a dual control in place. You shouldn't just be able to, hey, process me a wire.
Well, no, I'm not even talking about that. I'm keeping it even simpler. Just for the normal person, should probably change their email. I mean, not email, their voicemail to not have their voice on it. Mm. You know?
Yeah. But, I mean, folks are so online these days. It's so easy to probably, do that.
You don't want
to
come across a Jalen.
That part. I know, for real.
Where's your book?
At home. I ordered a whole bunch of copies, but if I was home, I would have brought some in, but I wasn't. Yeah, because you got to give me, like, your breakdown.
I always bring mine. I was going to put it right there. I thought it was in my bag, but it's not. Shoot.
I will. Because we talked and then you didn't call me back.
Oh, yeah, I did, and sorry.
You're good. You're good. Let's see. This was actually interesting. So this one says, went to my first day at work when I was apparently never hired. This is interesting because I'm like, how you don't know if you hired or not? And let me put this up here so people know exactly what these segments are right here. Because I think we still got the wrong stuff up there. Yes, we do. Absolutely astonished and infuriated. I accepted the job offer only to be told on my first day there that I declined my position. That's crazy. I did all the pre-employment stuff, background checks too, before showing up, which they told me to do. Received a call from HR, from an HR bottom feeder, that she messed up and assumed I had rejected position because I requested a schedule change. But of course, she did not acknowledge that she messed up and also claimed that she couldn't fix her brain dead mistake. So I literally don't have a job anymore because this moron, who is in a position of seniority, by the way, doesn't understand what the word means. Man, why imagine the future? Silly me, thinking I could actually start a career and not be stuck in dead-end jobs. And I'm sure she will not face any discipline in the future about this. Makes you think how many people's lives this one person has ruined. I contacted my organization several times, and I'm being ignored by everyone who is directly involved in this garbage fire that's currently my life right now. If I ever get an anal pop, I don't know who to name it after. They are going insane. This is unhinged. To those suggesting I lawyer up, you may be overly optimistic. So far, I've received nothing back from employment attorneys I've contacted besides two very prompt rejections of my case. Of course, they do not disclose why they cannot take my case, but it's probably because I wasn't hired. When I went into work, I'll keep trying, but I don't know if I get any justice out of this. If you quit a job to take this one, download all the docs you signed and talk to all the employment lawyer. Sounds like a terrible company, though. It's not a company. It was with my county's health and human services agency, which is quite poignant. I did quit my previous job for this one, though. I have been downloading and screenshotting relevant docs and conversations I had with this HR twit. I know this is a white person. Yeah. Reached out to the Civil Commission and filed a formal appeal, but I doubt it'll go anywhere. Edit. Went back to my job portal to download more stuff and surprised they deleted it. Seconded. My account is no longer active, so deletion is not confirmed. Man, that's wild. Like, what would you do if you showed up and they told you that you was never hired?
In this economy, you done got excited. You done told people. You done brought new clothes if you're supposed to be in office. It's just so nasty what be going on in the world these days. People was already struggling. Dang. I understand the verbiage he used. I would be saying more than that.
We know. Perfect, perfect. Did you have another one? If not, then I can go to this last
nothing
one.
Nothing good.
Okay. This last one is just really one of pretty much of, like, I know we do a lot of doom and gloom on here, so I wanted to actually brighten your day. Got the offer. Posted a few times in this subreddit, most recently about how burnt out I was on interviewing. I was laid off a year ago. It took me 6 months to find a new role, and I absolutely hated it, and it was a pay cut. After 6 months in that role, I got laid off again exactly a year ago from the last day off, from the last layoff. But this time around, I got a job offer after 2 months. It's $25,000 more than my first job that laid me off a year ago, and I couldn't be happier. Some differences from last time and this time. I finished my master's. New job is in relevant field. I increased my applications per week about 10 to 30. Set up job alerts on common job seeking boards, only applied to jobs less than 2 weeks old, and as soon as I see them, only applied on company websites regardless of where I found a role. Avoided recruiting agencies. Instead of tailoring my resume to every job or using one master, I edited and reworked my resume multiple times until it was near perfect and created a few versions depending on the job type industry I was applying to. That's still tailoring, my guy. but go off. I framed my experience to target roles more senior than what I had done in the past. For example, removed all administrative and customer service type duties from my job description so I could aim higher up in leadership, mid-level roles based on what I had done. I continuously refined my interview techniques, practiced my questions and framing, took notes on what I thought I could improve on, started being more short and concise in my answers, no over-explaining or oversharing. I never told prospective employers I was laid off. I framed it as leaving a job that wasn't a fit for XYZ reason. Not a lie. To pursue a job more aligned and then explain why the specified job I was interviewing for was aligned. Frame my other six-month gap as complete my master's. Also true. So you learned the game of finesse. Congrats. Bought some new interview clothing, so I always look polished. Before, I would thrift to save money. I do think that newer clothes also made a difference. Kept applying to interviewing elsewhere, even if I felt good or promising by the prior interview. Network a bit, resulted in at least one interview with the company. Never got too attached to any prospective employer role to manage my expectations, but this also helps with interview nerves, not coming across too desperate, even if you're really just excited about an opportunity. When I found out that I wasn't getting jobs due to skill gaps, I identified a few relevant skills for the industry roles I was targeting and would spend time in between interviewing, applying to use free programs and certs to upskill. Then I put it on my updated resume. Most of all, remember to take breaks. Go outside, see nature, keep positive attitude so I can show up with my best foot forward. Oops. This journey taught me a lot. It was brutal as hell, but I'm happy to finally see results. Shit takes time, but I'm confident we will all get there eventually. A lot of this is luck-based. It's kind of like playing the lottery. Every application and interview increases your odds. Just got to keep playing the game until something shakes, but don't lose hope. Yeah, so he got a lot of congratulations, but I definitely want to share that because he mentioned a lot of key things that people don't really do. They don't listen to their interviews back. They think every interview they did was good.
1,000%.
They don't realize what skill gaps they have, and they don't work on those. They don't know how to go work on them, and they don't prep right. They don't seem like they prep for an interview. Like, I remember one of the last interviews I did, I had to let – I only do this, too. I said it a couple times on here, but I let everybody know before time, hey, I got a notebook. I'm taking notes. Because I had one interview where a dude thought I was on my phone. It pissed me off. I was like, why would I be on my phone to interview? But anyway, needless to say, it was like a panel with like two people. And he was like, yeah, you look like a note taker. Because I was letting him know I was taking notes. But it was also showing that I had asked him some great questions as well. So I prepped. The more you prep, the less nervous you are. And it used to be harder to prep because of you didn't know what they was going to ask you. But now with AI, you can prompt it the right way. You can put the job description in whatever tool that you use. You can put like the LinkedIn or profile, whoever you're interviewing with, and it will come up with some specific things to help you out with. And then what I did to start focusing on stuff that I was doing bad in, I would take all the interviews I did bad in to me that I knew I struggled in, figured out what I struggled in, get AI to highlight those, and start asking me scenario questions about them. I research them, and I would record them and have it analyze what I said to see how I matched up if I felt confident about it. And that's how I would get better at certain questions. It's the same thing. It takes some time and effort, but it helps you out. So that's free 99 right there on how to do that. Some people have issues with recording stuff because like, oh, my interview's in person or whatever. Shoot, put your phone in your pocket, hit record.
I think that I like it because it's hard right now finding a job. And he gave, like you said, so many gems. And a lot of the times people will give you a couple, but he really broke down what worked for him. And even if you do or add a couple of those things, you might see it change, you know, what your experience or your success rate has been. I also think that interviewing is a muscle. It's not something you're just going to be able to go ahead and do and kill it if you haven't done it in a while. And just the way that you interview today and what folks are looking at is different from what they were looking at 5 years ago. You know what I mean? So you definitely got to make sure that you work that muscle and use the things to your advantage. Like you said, AI, you got social media, you got link, you got everything. You got all these resources that are available to you. You got write-ups and people who are just sharing the game. You just got to be somewhere where you can actually catch some of the knowledge that's being thrown out here.
For sure, for sure. Since I let this last one, I'll let you go into this next one on, let's see, the next talking point is North Korea behind the IT cyber attacks.
North Korea is your coworker and CrowdStrike has the receipts. Imagine you hire a software developer last quarter who has a great resume, they pass the interview, they show up to stand-ups, and they're a great communicator. And then suddenly CrowdStrike tells you that they might be funding a nuclear weapons program. This is not hypothetical. This is Tuesday. So CrowdStrike just dropped their annual threat report, and the headline is alarming. Between April 2025 and May 2026, a North Korean hacking group they call Famous Cholima was responsible for 47% of all state-backed hands-on keyboard intrusions targeting the U.S. sector. Hands-on keyboard means a real human being, not an automated malware, is actively operating inside of your system. This is going to be obviously harder to detect because it looks like normal user behavior, and Famous Cholima has mastered getting through the front door legitimately. Here's how the playbook works. North Korean operatives use AI-generated deepfakes, real-time face spoofs during video interviews, combined with stolen passports and driver's license to pose as American citizens. They apply for remote roles, they pass background checks, they get hired. Once inside, they do three things simultaneously. Collect a paycheck that gets funneled back to, steal intellectual property and sensitive data, and target crypto blockchain developers especially. North Korea pulled $2 billion in stolen crypto in 2025 alone. When they get caught, they flip the script. They threaten to leak the stolen data unless the company pays up. So the company gets extorted by the employee they just tried to fire. The sanctions don't stop this. The indictments don't stop this. South Korean intelligence estimates thousands of trained operatives are deployed globally with monthly earning quotas. This is a nation state running a remote staffing agency to fund nuclear weapons, and they're really, really good at it. So a couple of key terms. So Famous Cholima, again, is CrowdStrike's code name for North Korea's IT worker infiltration group. Deepfake fraud identity is when you use video or images to impersonate real people during verification. And if you think about this from a career angle, you have, the background specialist, which I do think that could potentially be a role that we might see emerging as remote hiring becomes obviously a threat vector. That's what we've seen. Mm-hmm. So I think for this one, it'd be important for you to understand how your company has or what do they have in place when it comes to verifying remote workers. I am seeing beyond that video call, right? I am seeing that sometimes employers are implementing some form of validation, verification, where you will actually have to get a mobile device and scan your face and prove right now randomly that this is you. I ain't mad at it. If you is who you say you is, but then we open up another vector of what are you doing with my biometric features? How are you protecting that data? So I don't know. North Korea definitely is on, that's some bad stuff going on right there.
No, I think they do the little thing. Hey, reach back and touch that, like, you know, trying to get them things. But like, honestly, I don't know how they pass on these things because wasn't you? Didn't you react? Didn't you watch that thing with me? Or maybe I did it myself when I reacted to them like interviewing.
I don't know. I don't remember.
But yeah, it was horrible. I was like, I don't know how they're passing these interviews. It was a mess to me.
Imagine you trying to fire somebody and they're trying to extort you.
Right.
No, seriously. Like, that's absolutely insane. And it's happening.
Give me a second. My freaking Dashlane logged out for whatever reason. Speaking of, while we were just talking, my mom was telling me how like AT&T messed up like my grandma's phone. They added her her old house phone to make it a cell phone number and a whole bunch of hoopla.
Bring back house phones.
But I was like, at this point,
I would so have a house phone. Actually, the thought of it ringing, like, you know, like.
But no, the thing that made me mad is, like, first of all, you can kind of tell, like, hey, my grandma's old. She don't understand what you're telling her. And you messed up her whole... He messed up... The dude messed up all her stuff to where the point my grandma's phone was off and she didn't even know. She didn't even get a bill. And she had no way to, like, to contact anybody. So I was like, that's just crazy. Where are we? Oh, okay. Anthropic and Fable. I think that's...
Remember when landlines, like... got that feature where whoever was calling would pop up on the TV?
I don't remember that. You had some money.
it would literally pop up on the TV. Yeah. I think it... I don't know what service that was through. My grandparents had that, though.
Okay. So, the Chinese cybercrime operation that used AI to scam hundreds of thousands of victims is being sued by Google. This one is fresh. Google filed this lawsuit today, June 12, 2026, and it hits different because the criminals use Google's own AI to run the scam. Google is suing a Chinese cybercrime network called Outside Enterprise for orchestrating a massive AI-powered phishing operation that targeted hundreds of thousands of Americans. The losses, estimated in millions. Here are the numbers. In a two-week period in May alone, 2.5 million fraudulent text messages sent to Android users, 9,000 fake websites, 1 million fraudulent URLs. Android users flagged 55,000 spam texts in 2 weeks. More than 2 complaints per minute. That's crazy.
I'm just glad they flagged them.
Yeah, you can
That's
do that.
That's a lot of people flagging them. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, people typically don't. They'll leave it there.
Yeah. I think Google on the back end mark knows when you mark something as spam, they go look into it through Google Messages. I know everybody was mad that they got to move to Google Messages, but stuff like this is... why it's able to kind of get a rein in on some of the stuff that's happening with people misusing their services. Outside Enterprise isn't just a hacker group. It's a phishing as a service operation. They ran Telegram channels where they stole step-by-step instructions and nearly 300 pre-made templates to amateur scammers, people with no technical skills, showing them exactly how to use Google's Gemini AI to build convincing fake websites. And this is the whole thing when we talk about the AI and the ramifications and what exactly are they making? And it's, I think the hardest part is in the org, they got all these different AI tools now for your like AI DLP and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to people of their own volition, how do you protect against that? And that's the hard part that AI is going to have no matter what.
Yep.
So it's back to the same thing that we used to have with all the people making these fake sites and stuff like that. It's just the scale is faster. And now people just have to be mindful of, like, hey, this don't look legit. So what do they impersonate? Google, YouTube, the U.S. Postal Service, New York Easy Pass, trusted brands people interact with every day. The messages came with urgent warnings. Your package is delayed. Your account is compromised. Verify your information now. Google is coordinating with the FBI and working with AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile to block these texts at the carrier level. They're also lobbying for 7 bipartisan federal bills, including the National Strategy for Combating Scams Act and the AI Plan Act. The FBI Cyber Division said it plainly. Criminals increasingly using AI to make fraud like this more convincing or harder to detect. And the fun fact, a 2025 Pew survey found 73% of U.S. adults have experienced some form of online scam or attack. This is not a niche problem. This is everybody's problem. Phishing as a service is a criminal business model where scam infrastructure is sold to other criminals. Smishing is phishing via SMS, text messages, and brand impersonation, creating fake versions of trusted companies to steal credentials or payment info. And then AI-generated phishing is using AI tools like Gemini, GPT, Claude, whatever, to create convincing fake websites at scale. So a couple of roles you can look into for like to kind of fight against this, like a fraud intelligence analyst or brand protection analyst, or I wouldn't say, I don't know why they have digital forensics right here. I guess you can analyze scam infrastructure, but I just say a regular, either security researcher or SOC analyst or somebody that's working in, those two or threat intel. I'll say those three. Versus just saying digital forensics, because digital forensics is more so.
Also, an exchange admin.
Yeah. They got these different
email
companies.
Email security,
now.
Whatever.
Yeah, email security. They got these different companies like Abnormal AI is like, they're rising the ranks of like, they handle like a lot of email. Like, it goes straight to them and you don't really see it. It's like a proof point, but better in a sense. So action items. Protect yourself now. Never click links and unexpected texts. Go directly to the official website. Check is your phone number and opt-out list. Text stop to known spammers using Google Messages spam filtering. Research what is DMARC, DKIM, SPF. I'm not going to explain all those to you, but when I'm working with people, when they are trying to be a SOC analyst and they're answering my phishing questions, I was like, these are three things you need to mention. Most of the time, you want to see if DMARC, DKIM, and SPF equal a pass or fail. And you can do that by analyzing the headers from emails. And in order to do that, you just right-click and you get the headers. There's different ways you do it in Gmail, different ways you do it in Outlook. And they have header analyzer tools that you can use on the web, and so that can help you out. And then learn how does Google on-device scam detection work on Android. It's a great topic to explore. So I don't see this stopping.
1,000%.
Matter of fact,
it's actually not going to stop.
While we're here, you might as well go ahead and check out it's going to be in the description. Mm-hmm. Check them out. If you click on something, your information is out there. Get it removed. The data brokers, they busy out here.
Especially with the AI. They busy getting my data offline. That's what they busy doing.
Man, I remember I used to have so much fun trolling them people when they would text me.
I sent you a few. You text me on the right day.
Yeah, I used to have a lot of fun. I'm like, okay, let's see what you got.
All right. Anthropic releases Fable and the cybersecurity community is not happy. So remember Mythos, the model so powerful Anthropic refused to release it to the public. They just released a public-facing version called Fable, and the people it was built for are the most frustrated about it. Anthropic dropped Claude Fable 5 as the public-facing version of the Mythos class model. So it's basically a more powerful and a more capable AI for everyone, but it ships with safety guardrails that automatically block or downgrade requests related to cybersecurity, biology, chemistry, and model distillation. So when Fable hits a guardrail, it basically swaps to Opus 4.8, which is an older, basically less capable model. And so it does this without telling that user. So you might be paying for that premium model, but still getting the budget model without knowing it. And that's the part that basically has researchers upset. Valentina Ciampi Palmiotti, a researcher at IBM X-Force, put it plainly, Fable rejects any request that could be tangentially cyber-related, even innocuous tasks like reading a blog post. Matt, a cybersecurity veteran, said the restrictions appear keyword-based. If you ask it to write secure code, it assumes that cybersecurity work instead of software engineering best practices, and then that would be an instance where you would get downgraded. The deeper problem is that a classifier that treats a nation-state attacker and a bug bounty researcher the same isn't a safety feature. It's basically more of a blunt instrument, and so legitimate defenders get blocked while sophisticated bad actors are able to, of course, find those workarounds. And so to Anthropic's credit, they responded fast. Within days, they issued an apology. We made the wrong trade-off, and we apologize for not getting the right balance. They're now making the fallback visible. When Fable downgrades, you'll basically know. If you're a verified security professional, you can apply to Anthropic's cyber verification program to have basically fewer restrictions. The lesson here is even well-intentioned safety systems obviously come with collateral damage, and the cybersecurity community is never going to stay quiet about them. Now, the difference between Fable and Mythos, again, Mythos was restricted preview, 40-plus vetted organizations, Project Glasswing only, and it had full cyber capabilities. Fable, public release, available to paid subscribers. They do have guardrails on cyber, again, bio, chem, and model distillation. The fallback model, when it hits a guardrail, it drops to Opus 4.8, obviously. And remember, that's going to be less capable. Pricing, Fable at $10 per million input tokens, $50 for a million output tokens, roughly two times the pricing of Opus 4.8. Anthropic, again, apologized and made that fallback visible. The cyber verification program will, of course, unlock more access for you. If you're a security professional, I would look into that cyber verification program, like what is needed from you in order to verify you. And then also just kind of thinking about, like, what is the right trade-off between safety and access for some of these AI security tools? That was crazy.
Yeah, I think it is.
Anthropic always is, like, in the news, though.
Yeah. Did you see that, matter of fact, did you see that they've changed the name from Mang to Mangos? Where is Meta?
Amazon?
Either Amazon, I think it might have been Amazon.
Netflix?
And they changed the Netflix to NVIDIA. Mm. G is still Google. O is OpenAI. Mm. I lied. M is Meta. A is Anthropic. N is NVIDIA. G is Google. O is OpenAI. And S is, what is it? Because Lee sent it to me. And I had it on my LinkedIn. SpaceX. S is SpaceX.
Mm. Oh, did you see they went live today?
Yeah, I saw that. And I think the stocks and IPO is going crazy.
It wasn't that expensive either.
Let me see something while I'm here. Do I have any fun stuff saved on LinkedIn? So he said, I finished all my work in 4 hours today. Then I closed my laptop. My manager didn't notice because it didn't matter. That would have been impossible at my earlier company. Consider two employees, X and Y, both working remotely in the same role. Same workload, same responsibilities. Employee X finishes in 9 hours, stays online until 6 p.m. anyway. Employee Y finishes in 4 hours, logs off at 1 p.m. Most companies punish employee Y. More tasks, longer hours, you still have time. Wrong. Employee Y is not your problem. They're your best asset. They finish fast because they're better, not because they work less. If you want more from them, pay them more. If you don't, let them log off. Punishing efficiency is the fastest way to turn your best people into your most average ones. At Deal, we measure outcomes, not hours. That one difference changes everything.
Clock it.
I thought that was good. Let's see. This is one. It was 2 weeks ago from Marcus Hutchins, but he said you could post true politics on LinkedIn and get serious support rather than being called a communist. I'm not. And getting to play internet pinata simulator for the rest of the week. Probably one of the most poorly aging posts I ever made. It aged perfectly. I just really didn't want for it to be true. It was back during COVID when tech workers just had started to push anti-worker, anti-union propaganda. I basically pointed out that tech workers are just workers, very high paid workers, but workers nonetheless. They are not capitalists. They don't own a business or have enough shares to influence board decisions in any way, shape, or form. They are closer to the working class than true capitalists. I made the case that tech companies turning their offices into theme parks and treating their tech workers like royalty was a temporary market condition, not their reality. Being a high-skilled worker, as they call themselves, doesn't make the company think any more of them as a human being. That the only difference between how Amazon treats its warehouse workers and its tech workers is nothing more than supply and demand. Tech companies were nice to certain workers because the market required it. There was such a low supply of tech employees and such a high demand that companies would do anything to make workers choose them over their competitors. But thinking that makes you a capitalist is naive. Unless you've accumulated enough income, earning assets to sustain your current lifestyle without working, you are just a worker, same as anyone else. And that is no place to be voting against worker rights. I conclude the post with basically saying that people need to get their heads on straight before the economic conditions shift and they find out what big tech companies really think of them. Anyway, I made the post about 2 months prior to first mass layoffs. It was quickly downhill from there. Even I was shocked at how fast the tides turned. Nobody was prepared, not even me. I knew it was coming, but it happened just way too fast. This is the reality of the system we live in. There's no class systems. You're either a worker or you're a capitalist. It doesn't matter how high your salary or hourly rate is if your ability to make ends meet is at the whim of your employer. People seem to want to organize themselves into classes based on how much they make per year, but it's nothing more than a distraction. If someone else pays your wages, then worker rights, unions, and better social safety nets are the policies you should advocate for. Convincing yourself that current system benefits you because your salary puts you in the upper class is just setting yourself up for failure. And with the rate at which deregulation and antitrust laws are being rolled back, even being a business owner won't save you. He had a lot of time on his hands to post that. That was one of the things I actually asked Nicole about, too. It's like, do you think they'll ever make more structure for U.S. workers as far as giving more protections like the EU has? Because everything's at will. And I was like, I don't care what nobody say.
It's just so difficult here because we got all these states and all these
individuals. One check is not no severance.
Huh?
Huh? One check is not a severance.
Yeah.
But some companies think that's a severance.
I agree with you 1,000%. But we know we are a capitalistic country, so.
Right, right, for sure, for sure. Let me turn all this stuff off since we are done with that. Control all off. Doop. All right, now.
You ready for the spelling bee?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it real quick. Let me put
don't this listen, on. Listen, Linda, listen.
Are you keep looking it, at the list or
keep
you?
Keep it cute. Keep it cute. Keep it cute.
No, are you pulling from the list or are you making your own ones?
You made a list?
You put a list in there.
Oh.
You didn't see that?
I did not mean to do that because then obviously you can just look at the list. Obviously. Like I can just look. That's cheating.
I know one of these is hard. I know this one. I'm just.
We can't use any of these words.
Really?
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to literally look him because I'm scared.
One of the words I was looking for is not on here, so I'm good. It don't matter. All right, guys. Cyber spelling bee. Actually, you know
keep,
what?
Keep I, it nice. Keep
I
it
actually
nice.
Can make that. Let me turn it on.
Keep it nice for me. We doing 3 rounds, right? Or 1 round? 2 rounds?
Let me turn it lower there now.
We can do 3. Easy, medium, and hard.
Uh-huh.
Listen, what if I can't spell it? I still got to try?
You're Arthur. You can spell.
I'm going to type, like, I need to type it because sometimes I need to write it out to, like, you know, clickety clank.
If I could turn the camera, I would put it at the whiteboard. It'll be a whiteboard session.
Well, that would be fun. We could do that next time.
We probably could do it. It'd just be tough to do. I'll go first.
You want to do me first?
Yeah. Spell hash.
Oh, H-A-S-H.
See?
Okay, cool. Spell malware.
M-A-L-W-A-R-E.
Okay. Round 2. Medium.
Let's see, because I was looking at some stuff over here. Okay. Some of that stuff is on there. And we talked about it today. Ooh, perfect. Sans got a...
What's going on?
Asymmetric encryption.
Both words?
Yes, one word together.
Okay, hold on.
It's going to correct it for you if you spell it wrong.
You can literally watch me. You can literally watch me. That's not a good one because it's going to show me. Okay.
Yeah, because telling you
it's
wrong.
Okay, no, because you're okay. Give me another one. I need to like write
auditing,
it down.
Auditing.
That's not a good one. Easy.
It's medium. It's bigger than the last word.
A-U-D-I-T-I-N-G. Auditing. Okay.
Let me get off of here so you don't see what I'm looking at.
Enumeration.
Enumeration. E-N-U-M-E-R-A-T-I-O-N.
Clock it. Okay, we might be a Keelan to be. Now this is hard. This one's hard. By the one I'm going to pick for you.
Okay. This one
to me, because I can't spell it.
This one wasn't on the list. This is one that's interesting because you got to really think about it. Non-repudiation.
Oh, that's easy. N-O-N-R-E-P-U repudiation.
See? Talking about you need to type it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Stenography.
Steganography. S-T-E-G-A. N-O, Stega. Yeah, S-T-E-G-A. G-R-O. I may mess it up because I forgot.
Okay,
what it was.
Start over.
Yeah, because the way is I'm thinking about it, I know how to spell it. Gronography. Yeah, gronography. S-T-E-G-A-G-R-O. G R A P H Y. I think I
okay,
messed it up.
No, one more time.
No, nah, I
say
messed it up.
Say it slow because you said it right. Say the word.
I know the word, steganography.
Okay, spell that.
It's S T E G A N A G R O P H Y.
Close.
See?
It's S T E G A N O G R.
See, I think it was.
But you spelt it right almost the first time. Like, yeah. you spelt the.
I thought it was like
steganon.
Oh, Stegan. See, I'm thinking Stega. That's why.
Steganon.
Steganography. Yes, yeah. Right. I forgot the end. But, I mean, hey, see, she's the winner this time.
This time. Woo. It was a good day today.
She is the winner. Let me see what I got for her real quick.
Spelling Bee champ.
Yeah, we didn't do this the whole time.
You are now watching the Testable Talk. Hosted by A.C. and Silas Shorty.
Period.
Cool. Now, all right, we had some fun. Let me get rid of. Let's open.
I spent the week at a cybersecurity training, and while I was at the hotel, I went to lunch, and a lady asked, "What's going on? Like, why are you guys all here?" And I told her, "Well, we're here for a cybersecurity training." She then took that as an opportunity to ask me what was going on with her computer, why wasn't it working, why she can't connect to the Wi-Fi, and all these issues that is just not that I don't know. One of the biggest misconceptions is that cybersecurity and IT are the same thing. They are not. They are related. They work together. They work very closely together, but they are not the same thing. Starting to think that maybe I should make a video explaining the differences between the two, because stuff like this happens way more than you think. If you've ever wondered what the difference is between IT and cybersecurity, let me know and I will break it down.
Say it again.
Actually, that's funny to me because people do that a lot to me. And although I can help you probably, I don't want to. And I'm not going to. Get somebody in IT to do it. 1,000%. Especially a printer, please.
Listen.
Get the printer. My brother, he be cracking jokes all the time. He be like, yeah, that ain't that. Yeah, that ain't my lane. That is not for me.
Man, that be my auntie.
I studied the A+. I could 1,000% help you, but I'm no.
Any issue she got? She let me tell me to come look at it. My auntie.
Your auntie, my grandma. I'm not even there.
She'd be like, hey, I can't see these folders on my AOL email no more. I try to look at them too. I say, hey, it must be archived. Hey, ask them because we can't find them. I try to come find them and we couldn't find them. But like I always say, if you say you do anything with computers, you are a digital mechanic.
Yeah. Me. Oh, and I also think that you are a hacker too. Mm-hmm. So you can hack into.
Hey, I need to get in her Facebook profile.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? When I was doing my interview, the CIO was like, so what made you want to get into cyber? And I brought up two things. The forensics class I took in undergrad, and then I brought up a social engineer, my friend in high school.
I'm screaming.
I logged into her Facebook. And I was like, who should I let walk me out for the pet rally? Like, it was like the homecoming something. So, you know, I had to walk out if it was the homecoming, whatever it was. And so I threw my name on there. So everybody's like, you the one that hacked into that thing because she ain't make that post. And we was just laughing at it. But it was just funny. I was like, yeah, back then, wasn't no MFA on Facebook.
I'm screaming. Not it was easy.
Yeah, because I seen part of her password. I said, I bet it's her little sister, Liberty. It was like Liberty 92.
Literally everybody, though. Everybody got their niece, their daughter, their kid as their password. Change it. It's easy. Change it.
And then I was like, hey, what's your email again? And she said,
I'm screaming.
You was
really on that.
Yeah.
That is so funny. That's so funny.
And she sent it to me like, no problem. And then all of a sudden, next day at school, everybody like, don't be hacking into my friend and stuff. And I'm just like.
I mean, she gave you the keys to the kingdom.
But you know what's funny? That didn't make me want to pursue offensive security. I still like the blue team stuff. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
I, too, enjoy my digital forensics class, too.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Let me open another one for us. This is one. Our favorite subject, Gen Z.
That a whopping 64% of the recent increase in Gen Z unemployment is because of remote work. And they also note that while AI has been a threat to entry-level workers, the Gen Z unemployment trend has been around since before the AI boom, which, yes, is a fair observation. But what's not exactly fair is the why behind this so-called incompatibility between Gen Z workers and remote work. They say it's because remote work is making it harder for managers to train and mentor new hires, so, accordingly, companies may be reluctant to hire less experienced workers in distributed work arrangements. Now, we'd hate to argue with the big man, but is this not more of a manager-employer problem than a Gen Z employee problem? It almost feels as if, per this excuse, younger workers are being embargoed from remote job opportunities simply because older decision makers are too technologically inept to figure out how to screen share over Zoom. But we know this isn't the case because most corporate workplaces function just fine fully remote in 2020 and 2021, and to date, 16% of companies are still operating fully remote. So executives definitely know how to adapt their business operations for the remote environment, and if you ask me, they could just adapt the way they train and mentor young workers to the remote setting as well. Needless to say, this excuse reeks of laziness at best and pure sabotage at worst, because let's be honest, when the owning class says it's harder to train and mentor employees remotely, what they actually mean is you're human capital, and if you work from home, we really can't surveil every movement you make as much as we used to be able to in the panopticon of the office. And that's bad for our bottom line because we need you to feel the constant horror of being watched so you can work harder, which allows us to squeeze as much value out of you and your depleting soul as possible. All in the name of maximizing profits, protecting capital, and good old power tripping, of course. And to be clear, we're not saying the Fed's data on remote hiring trends is suspicious. We're saying employers' motivations for driving those trends is suspicious. Really, this all sounds like a grand private sector conspiracy to pit Gen Zers against the concept of remote work. And we have our theories as to why, but drop yours in the comments because we're trying to see something.
I feel like she said a whole bunch of hogwash.
She went sick.
I ain't know what she was sick, talking about.
But it was still a good video. I do agree with her. It does put Gen Z at a disadvantage because you have to be intentional about hiring someone who doesn't have a bunch of experience remotely. It's not that they can't be a good employee. It's not that they can't be a great learner. But you definitely have to make sure that you're being intentional about the time that's being spent together. You're being intentional about goals that you're giving them over that 30, 60, 90, 120-day plan. I think it's baloney to just assume that someone who is just starting out can't be trained up and can't be successful. They probably took classes remotely. Obviously, they were able to complete a program successfully, and that's just an example. But I don't know. I don't like that because I think it's so important if somebody has the skill set to like take a chance on people. Like I really wholeheartedly believe that.
Yeah. I think most of the time, like I've been saying in a couple interviews, it's just honestly, it's all about EQ, realizing, hey, you can't manage these Gen Zers the same way. And even though she said that about, okay, can't monitor you, I mean, they can monitor you if they really want to.
And they will.
I just think, don't cover me, Gen Zers, but a lot of y'all are entitled because of they came up through the pandemic and all this other stuff, so they feel like they should be able to work remote. They do.
No, I'm just making a face.
And I understand that some of y'all don't know how to talk to people and all this other stuff, but you're probably going to level up faster if you go ahead and go into that office. I'm just keeping it being with you.
I don't want to be in the office, but I do miss... And I always say, and we always agree, I miss turning around and being able to ask three people right there, what do y'all think about this? Or have you ever seen this? The last time I was in office, I wasn't even in tech. I was in working at State Farm. And just being able to turn around and
Did you ever meet Jake from State Farm?
No, he wasn't there.
but yeah, no, it's funny because I did, one of the videos I did last week was, segments was 125K remote versus 165K in office.
And I'm going in office for that.
Yeah.
For that big of a deal.
Yeah, that's pretty much, it ended up being like an extra 24K a year after taxes. So I was like, who going to turn that down?
And
it was
like Gen Z-er.
Inflation. Yeah, but I understand why they would, but at the same time.
I'm not mad at the people who would.
Sometimes some of them are young, so they don't know what they don't know. You don't know inflation. You might have a family. And I was like, man, I wish I would sit there. Because if you go in office of 165, that's probably your bottom now. That means you can exponentially make more than that. And so a lot of them don't know that because they're just operating on that.
That'd be a really good social experience. Social experiment. Would people rather take more money to come in? And I mean, like, not 20 people voting on mm-hmm. it. Like, what does the larger U.S. population, how do they feel about that? Would people rather take less money and less room for promotion and, you know, growth within a company versus going into office and having a higher salary and more room to grow and learn in your role? I bet you These days, lots of folks would take that lower paying because working remotely does give you some benefits and some flexibility.
Crazy.
Well, I guess it really don't, though. It depends on your job, 1,000%. Because you can have a remote job where you're on the phone and you're sitting down all day and you don't have that freedom and flexibility in your schedule like you think you do.
Nobody tells you this, so let me be the one to tell you. Because I didn't know. Once you hit that six-figure range, the amount of onboarding you get, that six-month ramp period, those don't really exist anymore. Well, at least for me. It was just non-existent. Once you hit that range, they expect you to hit the ground running. They don't got time to be sitting around training. They expect you to already know. Even if you don't know, you got to act like you do. There is no onboarding. We brought you in. You need to figure it out fast. That's the kind of vibe it is once you pass that six-figure range. Figure it out. In fact.
He right.
I agree with him to an extent. Most companies, especially if you're making over 100. Now, when we start, not 100. I'm going to say like 150. 150, absolutely. If you're making just around 100, you might get some training. It doesn't mean it's going to be good training. It doesn't mean it's going to be good training, and it might not be specific to your role. It's probably more onboarding.
I put it like this. One of the places I did like a little contract or whatever, I was working by the end of the day. They just showed me what the sites was, whatever, and said, get in the queue. So he's right. I tell people all the time, you getting six figures. Hopefully you're with a good company that believe in training, but a lot of times they don't. So he's on it. But I wanted people to hear that because they were used to the...
People do think that you're about to get these jobs and they about to hold your hand and you're going to click here and you're going to click here and then you're going to save and then you're going to move on. Because a lot of the times there is, first of all, not a lot of documentation. The person who is teaching you, keep up. Record the conversation so that you can go back and reference it. I see in a lot of instances, folks absolutely do think that they are going to get in basically where they fit in, and that does not always work out well.
Yeah. Like, I just said it because a lot of people have seen that all the day in life and all that stuff. They think they're going to be in training for a month or two and make this money and not do nothing and just be able to tell people they work in tech and all this other stuff. So, yeah, man, I want y'all to know that it ain't that simple no more. Ain't that simple at all. Let's see. Let's go back to. So that was cool. Let's see this one. I thought this was pretty interesting. I'll follow this guy.
He's watch this. Nice. Although unemployment rate has been steady at 4.3%, the black unemployment rate has been 7.3%. When you ran for president, you courted black voters and talked about what you described as black jobs. How do you describe why this disparity is happening?
Don't focus so much on the title, black jobs, that you miss the box that he puts us in.
But where we're really going to do well is when all these plants are open. You know, we're building many car plants. We're bringing cars back from Germany. We're bringing, you know, we lost the car industry years ago. Black worker is really going to do well is when those factories open. So I think
what he is saying is that he believes that black people should only have factory jobs. This is exactly why getting licenses, certifications, degrees, this is exactly why it matters. The trend around education not mattering is extremely and particularly harmful to the black community, especially with a president like this. So the notion that you don't need education is insane. Now, people have said you don't need a degree to get into tech. You don't, but you need a certification. You need some level, some degree of education that tells a company that you're educated and you are a subject matter expert or that you're skilled at a thing. This man is single-handedly dismantling the possibilities of black people gaining wealth through employment. And don't tell me it never happened, because if I own $300,000 of equity in a major tech company, you can't tell me that won't create long-term wealth for my family. So, yes, make sure that you're working the right, a good black job.
Hey, as you say, he ate down.
I love that we literally talk about things repeatedly. Because we just talked about, and we've talked about plenty of times, how important it is for you to, as a parent, help guide your child to something that is going to last and allow them to thrive in this world.
Well, let's even go back before that. But he was talking about when people talk about degrees and they not need it. If you get on Threads and everything else, they're telling people you don't need a degree, stuff not needed and all this other stuff. And people not realizing, hey, when they start raising the bar again, you don't have a degree, you're going to be in the factory. And there's nothing wrong with working in the factory. But they pigeonhole you if you only at the factory level. Now, the smart people, if they get in the factory, they start going back to school so they can get out of the mundane stuff and they can start running stuff.
Yeah,
my leadership or something. My uncle, he is, I don't know what he does for GM, but since, like, GM used to have a big plant in Shreveport. And he always was, like, top dog to where his name, hold, wait, you could pretty much say, hey, Unc, I need a job. I'm down on my luck. Like, can you help me out? And get you a job.
And that's such a blessing to have.
Yeah. And but you only can get like that if you go do the proper stuff to get educated. Mm-hmm. If you don't get educated, you don't run stuff, you can't do that.
That's like one of my nightmares, is having the go to school, don't go to school conversation. Actually, not nightmares. You know that trend on TikTok, top five horror stories? Like, Don't go.
Yeah.
Don't go.
Yeah, it's you know, it's pretty interesting.
Are you mad that you went to school? Do you regret it?
No. Even with the loans, I don't regret it.
Same.
Because every night I go to sleep, I say, when there's a will, there's a way. And the things, everything that I've done has put me in, like, different places that I would not have gotten if I didn't go to school.
Yeah, all the programs that got me into tech were recent grad programs. So do with that.
Yeah, so. What you will. I mean, I know they every other week they back there in litigation trying to figure out what they're going to do with the save plan and all this other stuff. It's going to get paid regardless whether I pay it when I'm alive or I'm dead. It's going to get paid.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's my stance on it, because that's what people say, oh, you went in a debt. Like, man, nobody wanted to, but hey, most of our parents ain't prepared, no college fund for us to go.
I never cared about taking out the loans in order to better my life.
I think the last one... that was pretty cool, was the instant AI rejections based on systematic discrepancies the AI was built off of when it comes to those job boards and stuff like that.
If you've ever received a 4 a.m. auto-rejection email after applying to a job knowing full and hell well that nobody looked at that application, Stanford University just released one of the largest studies ever conducted on a hiring market in general, but especially on this one, that not only proves that you were not crazy, they're finally giving a name to this epidemic that we've been seeing that you need to hear. Hi, my name is Beverly. I'm a chief operating officer who's been scaling operations for over a decade in over 10 different industries. Here's what Stanford found. That 90% of companies are using applicant tracking systems in order to screen candidates, which you may have already known, but that's not what's damning here. What the Stanford Digital Economy Lab found is that most of these systems are built using the same small number of vendors, meaning when you are rejected by one company, you're actually being rejected by thousands, because all of these systems are running effectively on the same algorithm, which is what Stanford is calling algorithmic monoculture. You were never crazy. And if at any point during this hiring market you have said to yourself, it has never been this hard to get a job, you're right. Here's the part that these companies really don't want you to know. Once you have been flagged as a low-scoring applicant, again, across thousands of companies at this point, because 90% are using these systems, your rejection stays in those systems for 330 days. So if you're new to my platform, we talk strategies here. And here's one strategy that you can do to start bypassing the heck out of these systems. One resource that I'm sharing with you is called Lenny's Job Board. Here is why this one in particular is different. This is a community curated job board that is built around a trusted professional network. Jobs that are posted there, somebody is behind that post actually trying to freaking hire. Lenny's Job Board also states that candidates that apply through their platform are 50% more likely to get a second round interview than anywhere else, which is three times the industry average right now. If you are new to my platform, I need to reiterate that this is not sponsored. I've dedicated my platform to sharing highly vetted and reliable resources for this hiring market. And this is one that I came across after finding that Stanford study and realizing that y'all got to get the heck off these algorithms. And this is one way that you can do that. You were never freaking crazy. And I want you to look at your resume and remind yourself who the F you are. Because Stanford University just confirmed that these companies are losing out on incredible talent just like you for the sake of perceived efficiency. Comment below if you'd like more strategic tips on how to get you out of the algorithm. Share this with somebody who is blaming themselves for not getting a role in this hiring market right now. And follow for more tips.
That just makes me want to fall out.
Yeah. I don't have much to add on. I've said so much, but I just wanted to put that at the end. It's why we were talking about earlier, that's about so why sad. LinkedIn is so important. It is what it is. It is what it is.
And then I just love social media because I would have never known that if I didn't watch that video just now. Like how?
Well, I mean,
how would I know that? I mean, we know something's going on, but we don't know enough.
It's kind of like the thin ice of Jenga. Like I think the Workday lawsuit by the guy started everything with the biases. Like if I see Workday, I really don't be wanting to apply sometimes. Nope.
Most people will not apply to the job, and we know that.
But yeah, like so. In the doubt, AI is messing everything up. You got to get on your LinkedIn. You got to get on your Zoom. And you have to get in front of the people that matter. That's what I'll tell you.
I'm not mad.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Do we got anything we want to leave the people with? I don't know when, whether it's next month or August, but we definitely still trying to do this get together probably at Think Puttery in the Colony. I don't know what the cost is or... I think it's something in the small groups, but if you get to this end part and you're trying to pull up on us, then you know that it's something that we think about doing. Just want to have good vibes and good fun and then take it from there. And then if we got anybody watching, do you have any spots left for the book signing?
Yeah, it's tight. Link in my bio on okay. Instagram.
If y'all want to come to the book signing, definitely hit the link in her bio. What else? Join the Patreon. I left that to the end, trying to improve stuff with the metrics and everything else. Everything is like pretty much ad free unless we just throw an ad into it. And yeah, subscribe to the mailing list. I got some other stuff on the rocks or working. But yeah, until next time, I stay textual and we out. Peace.